Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Schmozone Podcast, episode 38. Today's episode is sponsored by Sheath Underwear, the most comfortable pair of underwear I've ever worn in my life. We're here in Abu Dhabi. It's hot. It's humid. I'm sweaty. This is the underwear that protects my balls. They got the dual pouch protector. They're comfortable. I love this stuff. Get yourself some. Use the promo code SCHMO. Get 20% off. Oh, you don't believe me? I'm wearing it right now. The other sponsor of today's podcast is SoRight. You saw the SCHMO episodes, the SCHMO and the Pro episodes with Michael Chandler, the Korean Zombie. Utilizing the SoRight, low back pain, the psoas muscles, hip flexors, shoulders, the little grooves in there, they massage your body right. Go to SoRight.com, check it out. You will not be disappointed. Let's start the show. Welcome back to the Schmo Zone, episode 38. I'm Dave Schmolenson, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
Helen Yee. Sports isn't my last thing, so...
Okay, just clarifying that. And today's amazing guest is the wonderful and talented, the one and only Megan Olivi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, thanks for joining us. We are on the beautiful deck of the W Hotel here in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, we are. This is our home for weeks at a time here in Abu Dhabi. It's an amazing host. It's been a great hub for us, so W's treat us well.
It has. I just want to start off by saying this, because I noticed this. One of my favorite things to do is read people and read people well, but you have this amazing, uncanny ability to put on your game face when the camera's on, because you have a great outgoing personality, and then when the camera's on, the action's on, it's like I could watch your face just transform into on camera, on air, Megan Olivi mode, and it's amazing, it's professional, and it's one of a kind.
Thank you. Yeah, it is different though, that's for sure. Like, me in real life is different than me on camera, but I think that's how we all are, right?
What was that adjustment period like for you to, you know, get into that mode, that on-camera mode? Because that might not have been your first passion in life, this direction that everything's turned to.
Yeah, you know, I think for me it's kind of a balance. Like, I do like to show who I am and make sure that my personality comes out. I think that's what makes all of us unique as media members or as people who conduct interviews and work with athletes. So I try not to lose who I am, but it's also like I'm way more professional on camera than I would be outside. Like, I'm pretty easygoing. I'm quiet if I don't really know somebody. And but I need to make sure that I'm doing my job to the best of my ability. So it kind of took a little bit to find that right balance, but I think I've got it now.
For sure. And here in Abu Dhabi, we do a lot of MMA, obviously, covering the UFC. Yeah. But I also know that you do a lot of work with the NFL. But yeah, this pandemic's probably put a lot of wrinkle in those plans. I'm just curious, right off the bat, are you doing the NFL at all this year? Is there a playoff bubble? What do you hear on that front?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I can. So I was offered some games that, because of how we're traveling to Fight Island this time around, I had to turn down. So last time we left on Mondays, and this time we left on Fridays, which meant that whole weekend I would be unable to work football games. So I had to turn a couple of them down. And then there's a rule that you can't be out of the country for any more. You have to be in America, I should say, for 2 weeks before you work a game. So even some of my colleagues, like Kenny Albert, who was in the NHL bubble in Canada, he was safe, he was fine, he was tested multiple times. He couldn't go back to calling games until he was in the United States for 2 full weeks. So even when I came back for the, like, 10 or 12 days that we came back, I couldn't work football because I wasn't in the U.S. long enough. And then I'll have to take a couple of weeks before I can. And then we're like more than halfway through the season, so hopefully I'll get at least a couple of games in, or maybe some features. The crew over at NFL on Fox is always so great and accommodating and understanding, as is the UFC, because, you know, this is my main role here. So it's I'm really hopeful that I'll get to do some games, because I love it. It's different. It's nice to mix things up and kind of like see what else is going on in the sports world. And for me, it's just fun to like kind of, you know, work on that role as well and make sure I'm continuing to get better and succeed and grow. So yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, when I have some weekends off from UFC and I'm back in America for a while, I'll get on the field.
Yes, best of both worlds. But I'm curious to know, kind of, what are some of the differences to prep for an NFL game compared to UFC fight week?
Yeah, it's a good question, because there's obviously more football players, certainly when you combine both teams, and there are fighters that we're covering on a specific card, but you're not telling as many unique individual stories, I guess. So what we do on Fridays, we'll meet with the home team, we'll go to their practice, we'll do a couple of interviews with coaches, probably like five or six different people between players, coaches, and personnel. And then on Saturday, when the visiting team lands, we'll meet with them, same thing, five or six people from the team. For me, I'm like a super over-preparer, so I will have like 7 pages of different storylines that I've gathered from one-on-one conversations to make sure. It's always important, no matter what I'm doing, that I can say, like, I spoke to this person. Not hearsay, not something I read. Like, I, from the horse's mouth, this is what I got, this is what they told me. So I kind of like take all Saturday night, and I make sure that no matter what situation we are in a game, no matter offense, defense, blowout, close game, star players, newcomers, I have something that I can add to that broadcast. So, you know, that's probably like 20-something, you know, pre-made reports, plus you're talking about action on the field, but it's a much shorter work day. games are much shorter, you know, we're only, you know, now with COVID, the rules have certainly changed. We're not even allowed to be on the field the way we were before, but it's a shorter work day. It's a lot of different prep, but it's still, for me, it's about storytelling. And so it's just trying to figure out, making sure you have all your bases covered, because, you know, there's sometimes in game you'll hear from a reporter 15 times, and sometimes you'll just hear one injury report and that's it. It's not predetermined like sometimes we're able to do with UFC, when you'll have walkout reports for certain things. So yeah, it's just making sure like you're over-prepared with every aspect of the game.
And I know you just got out of UFC 254, you know, broadcast meetings. You got DC. Mm-hmm. I know Dan Hardy's there. Michael Chiesa's on the desk. Let's talk about this, because this is a huge, huge week. What were those broadcast meetings like? Because there's no shortage of storytelling. We got Khabib and Justin Gaethje. It's a huge fight card.
Yeah, I mean, it is huge, and it feels huge. And it's always great to be able to have all these different fight minds in one room. But when it is a pay-per-view, you know, it's John Anik, usually Daniel Cormier and myself, or whoever's in Daniel's role, if it's, you know, Dominic Cruz or Paul Felder or Michael Bisping, we're streamlined, because we only get a certain amount of time with each athlete. So there's a lot of prep that goes in beforehand. John leads our meetings, and then Daniel Cormier will go, and then I'll make sure I'm getting what I need at the end. And we have about 15 minutes for each guy, so it really has to be, you have to be firing on all cylinders to get the best information you can out of them, but make sure you're not redundant with maybe interviews they've done throughout the week, and you're not wasting their time, and you're not holding them longer so the person behind them now has their schedule messed up. So it's a unique situation, but it's always really fun. Those are private closed door things where no one is filming them unless they're choosing to film it themselves. So oftentimes fighters are more open, they're a little more relaxed, because nothing that happens in that room will ever be said until the broadcast begins. And then even then, sometimes fighters are like, you know, don't say this at all. And it just kind of helps build a rapport. So I really enjoy being able to have those experiences with the team.
Is that a lot different than preparation for fight nights?
Yeah, I would say so, because we just want to make sure, like, especially with somebody who's making their debut, you know, we're finding out as much as we can so we can ask them about it. I think if you don't do the preparation before the fighter meetings, you can be left with a lot of holes. You know, you can be like, oh, I wonder why they did this or how they felt about that. So it's a lot more background work. And then for fight night, it's more about, you know, the fight week experience. You've already done all the, all right, you've watched all the fights, you've talked to them about these past experiences. now you're focused more on the lead up and what's going to happen on Saturday night.
Yeah, we had John Gooden on the podcast last week, and he shares very similar sentiments to you. There are intimate conversations that go on, but could you tell us the vibe that you felt with Habib? This is his first fight week without his father. This is huge.
Yeah.
You know, this is 28-0, trying to go for 29-0. Everyone knows he's looking for 30-0 before he retires. What's the vibe that you felt from him and maybe Justin Gaethje this week?
Yeah, well, so Habib was actually on Zoom. So his was on the computer, but he was great. He was fun. Him and Daniel Cormier have such a great rapport because they're teammates. It kind of really helps the meeting because they're kind of joking. And at this point, they have done so much media that it's almost like, okay, we only need 10 minutes because we've watched or we will make sure we're taking in the press conference that happens after this and stuff like that. So when you mention his dad, I think something we're really sensitive of is not beating a dead horse in these meetings.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing he's going to say about that heartbreaking loss that he hasn't already said. And why continue to bring it up with him? And that is going to be a huge story for this fight. No matter what, it's unavoidable. It's in the lead up. We're going to have to ask him about it. You know, I certainly assume on Friday at weigh-ins, it's a question I will have to ask. It's not something I take any pleasure in, the same kind of feeling with Walt Harris with his last fight where, you know, you're like, I don't want to bring this up for you as you're getting ready. But you also have a job to do and you have to. But then, you know, we just talked to Walt and I asked him, I was like, is it a relief to get that fight week over? And he's like, yeah, because I was crying all the way up until I walked out. So it is a storyline, but today he was great. He was laughing. He was being funny. Justin Gaethje was awesome. Trevor Whitman was in there, like, taking these professional photos with him and this plant that was on the table. So they both were really, they seemed energetic. Yeah. They seemed relaxed. They seemed on the time zone. I mean, obviously, Khabib has been nearby. But, yeah, it was a great vibe, and that's how you want the fighters to be. You want to feel like they are well rested and they feel good, because then you know, okay, this could be a really, really good fight if they're feeling their best.
Well, what about the co-main event? Speaking of like great vibes, we spoke to Jared Cannonier yesterday. He was in a great mood.
Yeah, I love his zen, right? He was telling us about his necklace and his stone and his crystals. I love his zen and his vibe. And Robert Whittaker I just think is one of the nicest realist people in the game. I think, we talked to him about it a little bit, but, like, I think he has helped so many fighters by being vocal about needing to take a break when he was burnt out. And I think that is so admirable, because I think oftentimes many people feel that way and are too embarrassed to maybe admit it. But when you have a guy like Robert Whittaker saying it's okay, I think he did a real lot of good for our roster without even realizing it.
And he's so realistic, too. It's like, even if he wins this fight and he gets a championship bout before Christmas, he's like, I got to think about it for my family. You know, I got three young children. Christmas comes first in the Whittaker family. And that's so admirable to think about. One thing I have to ask you, though, too, is we've done a lot of these fights now here on Fight Island, and it only seems to continue. With this Habib Gaethje card, this is the only one that seems to go on local time here.
Yeah.
It's not starting at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. or whatever. Is that because of Habib? He has the power here? What do you think that's
for? You know what? I'm not quite sure. That is a good question. When he fought here last year against Dustin Poirier, it was the same scenario.
Yep.
So you have to think maybe, but I actually don't know the answer to that. I do know that I am struggling with the time change these past couple of days. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm sleeping maybe 3 hours because we were all staying up through the night and then going to bed at 10 o'clock in the morning because that's what we had to do for these fights. So yeah, it's been a little bit, it's been a little challenging, but yeah, I think on fight night we'll be appreciative of it.
Oh yeah.
As the airplanes take off right over us, we are outside the W. For everybody listening and not watching the podcast too, we did the same thing as you. We flew here for UFC 253.
Yeah,
we flew back to Vegas. We were home for about a week and a half. Then we came back for the Korean Zombie Ortega fight card and obviously staying for UFC 254. It's crazy what we're doing to our bodies.
It is. I feel like I've aged like 500 years.
You're always beautiful.
Oh, thank
though.
You. But okay. I just feel so old. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, oh, it's happening. Like adjusting to the Vegas time zone. Yeah. That's really tough.
Yeah. I think when we go back, we're all in for like a couple of days of struggle. I already told Joseph, I was like, I am not cooking the first 2 days I'm home. So prepare. I mean, prepare to order from wherever because I'm not stepping foot in the kitchen unless to get something out of the fridge.
But you are a great cook. Hey, I always look at your IG story and I'm like, damn, that looks super good.
Oh, thanks. I try. I love cooking. And I love feeding people. That's kind of more of what it is. Like, I love eating. That's like my number one hobby.
Hey, but, us too.
Right? Oh, yeah, man. It's the best. And we live in a great food town. But for me, I think it's the way I grew up in being in an Italian household. It's like, that's how you show love is you feed people. Yeah. So if you come to my house, I, like, don't really accept no as an answer that you're not hungry. I'm like, no, but you are. Here's, like, 8 things that you have to eat from. So, yeah, I'm always cooking. I actually did a little cooking segment here.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah, to get Fight fans prepared for a card that is brunch time. So it's very easy recipes that your average Fight fan can follow to have a good brunch as they watch fights.
Your recipes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, nice and easy, though. It wasn't anything complicated. It's like Nutella French toast, like things people have in their house, but showing them how to make it.
Yeah, but I noticed that you even cook something like marinara sauce from scratch. Yeah. You don't go store-bought or anything like that. You make it all from scratch.
Yeah, and most of the time it's like my own tomatoes and everything that I've like put through the process of canning and everything. So there are part times of the year where I have to buy things canned, and I don't make my own tomato paste. Goals, I want to.
Goals.
But everything else is from scratch completely. Yeah, like it is more time consuming and it's harder, I guess, on myself, but I have a hard time when things are not from scratch. And so, yeah, it takes a little bit more time, but it's always worth it.
Yeah, David loves cooking too. I'm embarrassed to say he's the chef.
No,
in our
great.
Relationship, I'm the dishwasher.
Okay, perfect. Somehow I'm both in mine.
And toilet cleaner.
She does a great job cleaning. Chef Schmo, I mean, there's a lot of time, especially during the pandemic. Love to cook, you know. It's just something I just enjoy doing. It's so much more rewarding.
And I think when you're on the road so much,
people,
like, assume, oh, you must, like, love going to restaurants or... Like, sometimes you just want your own cooking or your own food and you don't want to go to a restaurant, no matter how good it is. And that's the thing is, like, we travel enough where we don't have a choice. So it's nice to be able to just choose to do it on our own and, like, just make things a little healthier. Or
yeah,
just
know
what
you're
putting
what's going
in.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how much more rewarding is it when you're in a restaurant and you order something? Like, man, I make this so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Especially Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, and they... oh, he loves Brussels sprouts. But it's like in the restaurant, they charge, like... $65, and then when you make it yourself, you're like, oh, this only costs.
Especially
me.
When you
like,
know the ingredients going into it. Like, obviously, to be a good chef, fresh herbs make everything much better. And then when they charge up the wazoo for certain things, it's like, man, I could have just made this myself at a fraction of the cost.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So it saves money, and it just feels better. You don't have to leave your house, even though that sounds so silly during COVID when we were all complaining about not being able to leave. But yeah, it makes things better.
For sure. So you've been all over the world now. I mean, here we're in beautiful Yas Island, Abu Dhabi. What's been your favorite destination that isn't here, Fight Island, that you've been to so far while doing everything with the UFC?
That's a good question. A few come to mind. Probably Tokyo is my favorite place. I've been fortunate enough to go a couple of times. But Singapore, I absolutely loved. Mexico City was amazing. I've been there a few times. And then... maybe Vancouver. Those are, like, my top. But Tokyo is one of my favorite cities in the world, and I've only been able to go there because of work. Like I said, I've been there a few times, but it's always with UFC. And so that's probably my number one. It's unlike any other. It's like New York City on steroids.
It is.
Yeah.
And there's sushi, of course. Super
good. Oh, yeah. We did the breakfast sushi after the market, and it's just so clean and so safe, and everybody's so welcoming, and the food's so amazing. It's just... the fashion scene, like, it's all so good.
Well, is there somewhere that you haven't been yet that you would love to travel to?
I think, like, every place in the world. I think, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but the more you travel, it's almost like the more places you realize you haven't been.
Yeah.
True.
So, it's like, okay, I've been to a lot of places in Europe, but not nearly as many as I want to go to. And then I would love to go to places like Morocco and Egypt. And then, you know, there's places in South America I haven't gone to, so... And there's a ton of places in America I haven't even gone to. Like, I haven't even gone to the Grand Canyon. We can drive there.
Oh, I said this. We were supposed to go there for my birthday in March, but that's when the pandemic literally started. We were going to go camp. We were going to stay overnight. Yeah. But literally, it put a monkey wrench. It was my 30th birthday, too. It put a monkey wrench in all of our plans.
Yeah.
Horseshoe Bend was on the list, too. Yes. We've yet to go. There's so much stuff to do. I mean, you say that now, too. Have you checked out The Social Dilemma? Have you on Netflix?
I'm too scared. I'm scared to watch
it. I'm scared to watch it, too. We are so connected to our phones as a society. Like, going out in the wilderness for a couple of days and just turn off social media, that's something we need to do.
It can get toxic, social media.
For sure. And I just think people are too dependent on it, connected on it. They get their validation from it. So I try to limit it. Like, I barely use Twitter anymore because I just try and limit what I'm using and why I'm using it and how I'm using it. And so for me, it's just, I agree. It's not necessarily the best place. So I just try and take a step back. And I feel like I've actually felt a lot better about things because of it. I'm like, you know what? It's not worth that one or two comments that might be bad out of so many that could be good. Those are the ones that stay with you, and it's natural. And people are like, don't listen to the haters.
It's hard. Yeah.
It's hard, and it's not our human way. So I just think, for me, I limit a lot of what I do or what I put out there, and it's made things a little bit easier.
But I have to add, I do admire not only how you carry yourself, but just your professionalism and how you are both off camera, on camera, and on social media.
So. Thanks. That means a lot. No, I try. I always look at it as, like, I want my dad and my nieces and, you know, I want them to be able to look at anything I put on social media and be proud and, you know, I just want to conduct myself in a way that I'll look back on and be happy with. And so, you know, I think that there's whatever makes a person comfortable and happy and is their prerogative, I support, but it doesn't have to be everyone else's. You know what I mean? So for me, I'm a little bit more conservative about things. I'm a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not always showing, like, you know, crazy things about my life, but I want to put out there an example, if I can, that is a positive one, that you don't have to have, like, that stereotypical way to the industry. Like, I'm sure you hear all the time, Helen, but it's like people will talk to us as if, like, we haven't earned what we've gotten and we haven't put in the work. Like,
oh my gosh.
I'm like, I have my master's. Like, I have worked from literally making no money all the way to where I am now, which, you know, I still, this is not even close to, like, where I believe I can be at the end of the day, but we're always working towards it, and we're always doing the best we can, and morally, and doing things the right way, and maybe that's a slower path, but it's the path that when you lay your head down on the pillow at night, like, you can feel good about yourself, and so you don't, like, that's what I always think. It's like, okay, yeah, there'd probably be a faster way to get to things if I, like, I'm like, hey, here's me in a bathing suit, or here's me doing this. Like, but no, like, that's not me. If it's good for somebody else, that's amazing for them. But it's like, I wanna put that example out there in case one of my nieces wanna follow in my footsteps. I want them to know, like, you could still do it that way.
And I respect that 1,000,000%.
I respect you. You know I love you.
Yeah,
I know. Likewise, I love you.
We're all sitting here because we work hard.
Yeah.
And social media, it's like a human scrapbook. This stuff is gonna live here forever. Yeah. This is like the wild, wild west of the internet.
Yeah.
Like, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years down the line, people are going to be able to search the internet and see these photos, see these tweets, see these images that you put on there. So many people aren't cognizant of it. And then there's so much hatred in the world, too. Like what you said, too, at the very beginning of what we're going off on, it's like, it's so easy to want to respond to that. But think about what's going on in their lives for somebody to say something so negative towards you and everything like that in that very moment. And they could say so much hate towards you. I'm sure you two, as women, good-looking women, get that all different time. It's like, for me personally, I play a character. I hate social media. I don't do anything for David Schmolten. I just do it for the schmo. So I can only imagine how much you guys have to go through on a daily basis from these messages.
Yeah, it sucks. But you know what? Somebody told me something once that kind of stayed with me, and I try and bring that back into the forefront of my mind when I'm upset about something. It's like, nobody who's doing better than you is going to go on the internet and write a mean comment about
you.
True. You know, and so they're like, that's actually a really great point. Like, the people that I look up to would never, like, go on to Twitter or leave me an Instagram comment that is negative, you know? So I just have to always remember that. It's like, you're right. people who do that have nothing else to do. And if you have nothing else to do, what a sad state that is.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of things that you've accomplished, obviously, like, you've achieved so much in your career, and someone that I look up to, but what are some of the goals that you have for yourself?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, I mean, I want to grow this role that I'm in with UFC. I mean, if I had my wish, we would be doing a report on every fighter. Like, you know, I do these walkout reports, and you'll see, you know, sometimes you'll see two and sometimes you'll see six in a night. If I could, I would do one every single walk, because I think every single fighter has a story that deserves to be told, and there's, like, interesting aspects that are maybe not necessarily anything to do with what they're doing inside the octagon, but something I think the viewer should still hear about, should still know about, should still care about.
That's something that ESPN Plus should pick up and put at least on their platform for digital. Yeah. So you, the Megan Olivi profile of every single UFC fighter.
Yeah. Pitched it to them?
Yeah, I mean, I pitched a lot to them, but, you know, I never stop. But I would love to continue to grow that role. I think, you know, outside of UFC, I'm fortunate to do the NFL. I continue to grow there, which, you know, this is my third season, so it's important to continue to do that. And then, you know, somebody I'm friends with, but I also really look up to, you know, Kelly Ripa, which she does with Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that is a huge goal. I think I just love people's stories so much that to be able to speak with people from all walks of life is so interesting to me. You know, they have MMA fighters on there, but then they'll have actors and musical acts and magicians and just, like, everything you can think of. And to me, that's really cool. And she's, like, one of the greatest people I have ever met, like, genuinely. So it's something that I aspire to for sure.
Yeah, I saw that photo of you and Joe with Kelly and Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah.
That must have been one of those goals, those bucket list things.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've known her. We've known their family for a while now, so it was awesome that Joe got to be a guest on there and, you know, kind of, like, get to that level, which was very cool. But, you know, as personally, they've really welcomed us in as family into their home and into their friend group and their family group, and so that's been really awesome. And she's been a really good source of advice, and, you know, I would love to, like, be able to fill in for her on days where she's off the show, and it's something that's been talked about. So she's amazing. But, you know, my thing is I just never want to be stagnant. Like, no matter what it is, I just, you know, I'm starting to host more for UFC because I didn't want to just be, you know, pigeonholed into this one thing. Not pigeonholed, I should say, but I just didn't want to only be able to do this one thing. I wanted to be able to tell the team, hey, if you need me to step into this role, I can do it. If you need me to step into that role, I can do it. So that's really important to me, to be able to do multiple things, to be able to continue to grow, and to bring new parts to it. I mean, a few years ago, nobody would have thought I'd be standing on the octagon talking about somebody for 30 seconds as they're walking out and, like, telling their childhood stories, you know what I mean? But now people really like it, and they've really taken to it. So that's what I want to continue to do, to elevate the brand, to elevate the athletes, and to really tell the stories that need to be told. You guys know, every person has such a wild story of how they got to the UFC, or what their childhood was like, or what their life is like now as a fighter. That deserves to be told. So all of that is, you know, those are definitely goals I continue to work towards.
And you have such an interesting kind of vantage point of this sport too. You're married to Joseph Benavidez, one of the top MMA fighters in the game, and there's a lot of people that are tuning into MMA for the first time, especially because of the pandemic and the UFC being the first professional sport back. You know, fortunately, there's a lot of people that tune in and they just see, like, a lot of blood, guts, gore, and just fighting. They don't really understand the martial arts aspect of the sport, of the nature of this, of the level of respect.
Mm-hmm.
Could you kind of touch on that for all those kind of casual or people that are new to the sport and getting into it and really starting to learn things?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I've gotten so many messages throughout COVID that are like, oh my God, me, my mom, my grandma, like, love you because you tell these stories we would have never watched, but we saw you and we kept it on. And then we were like, oh my gosh, did you hear about this person? And now they watch all these fights. There's probably like 10 different groups that started sending me messages when we started the Jacksonville card. And then it was just, it's been really cool because there is so much more to be offered, and we don't question that in other sports. We don't question that in football or in hockey, where you still see these hard hits or these fights or, you know, whatever it may be. We don't ever question that they're not human beings with backstories and this and that going on for them, but for some reason we do for mixed martial arts. And I want to change that because, like I said during the media day earlier this week, or was it last week? I don't know, I'm jet lagged, but last week where I said, you know, I approach everything as if it's Joseph because, like, Joe is just, like, my favorite person in the entire world, and I feel like he's got so much to offer the world, and there's so many things I want everyone to know about him. And so when I am approaching the sport, I think, like, okay, like, what would I want people to know about Joe? Like, okay, what do I want people to know about this fighter? Or how can I approach this interview to give them the best platform? Like, I'm kind of like the pitcher in Home Run Derby. I'm trying to, like, serve up the best questions I can so they can hit it out of the park and explain themselves to the public. So, yeah, I think there's so much more. They are such great athletes. There is so much respect between fighters. Even if they go in with heat, they usually end with handshakes or hugs. True. Or friendship, like we saw with Zombie and Ortega, you know.
Amazing.
So it's
the,
like,
respect, yeah.
There's just so much to offer the world with the sport, and if I can add a little bit to that, you know, it's my honor.
Do you notice if there is any differences between getting to know the fighters compared to, like, the NFL players?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, but it's hard to answer because I think football players are a little bit more conditioned to, like, media and having to go to media and having to answer certain questions, and just it's part of the process. So sometimes I feel like they want to hurry through, but sometimes I also feel like because they're used to it, they're a little bit more comfortable and they're a little bit more open.
Yeah.
So I think it's all sort of an individual basis. I would say they're pretty similar across the board, but you might get fighters who are relatively new to this whole world, and so they're a little more closed off, or they're not quite sure how to answer things, and, you know, it's our job to open them up. But you also get football players who are either shy or they're over it, or, you know what I mean? So it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, just we've all, I guess, have experience covering NFL players. And then the biggest difference I have, and you can even throw NBA players into that, is not all of them are this way, but there's a lot of entitlement. Like through Pop Warner football and everything like that, the Nike Elite 11s or whatever, you have scouts, you have marketers, agents, you have people pitching at them, throwing money at them at young age, teenage age, and giving them all this attention and stuff like that. So they're conditioned to the spotlight, to the media, of that sort of entitlement. And some of these fighters come from nothing. Yeah. And, like, literally they're working regional scenes, and then they get their finally their big moment. So there's definitely a big difference in the seesaw. It's not like that for everyone, but I've definitely noticed that a lot between fighters and NFL football players.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really fortunate. I've worked with great teams, and everybody's been so kind, and it also really helped me, especially my first season, that they're all huge UFC fans.
Yes.
They would be like, what are you doing here? And, you know, that kind of, like, got me already their trust and an in there. So they were a little bit more, like, I'd have to be like, okay, well, we can't talk about this on air. So let's talk about the things we can.
That was actually awesome. Max Crosby. Shout out to Crosby of the Raiders. Huge MMA fan, huge Anderson Silva fan. I love that kid. He's awesome, and he's a stud. But there are some amazing football. I mean, there's just so many because there's 53 people on a roster, right? Yeah. I mean, it's I mean, obviously we all love covering all sports, all athletes to the get-go.
And now with Raiders in Vegas, could we see you reporting there more?
Well, they're traditionally on CBS. They're not really that big of a
AFC is CBS.
I have a Raiders game. I've had a Raiders game before. So I had Raiders versus Browns. Baker Mayfield's first ever NFL start was my game. So I have had Raiders games before. But I'm like, it'd be so nice to just drive there and then drive back the same day, you know what I mean? That would be so great. But I would certainly love to do more Raiders games. We'll see what the future has.
Let's end the podcast on this note. I mean, obviously we're going through a global pandemic. It's tough times, but any young aspiring broadcaster out there, what's your best advice, knowing what you know now and kind of how to navigate through these difficult times? Like, what kind of advice would you give somebody?
I would say do the work. Do the work. You do not start out in a glamorous position. I suggest some sort of schooling, but if you're not going to do that, like, get as much hands-on as you can. Learn how to shoot. Learn how to edit. Learn how to produce. Me as a talent, that's probably been my biggest benefit, is that I got hands-on experience through college and graduate school, and I took it a lot more from a producer's role than a talent role. And that kind of helps me in the field now, where I can think about things as a producer, even if I don't have one with me, or here I don't need the producers to really check up on me because they trust the work that I'm doing, and they I understand the angle I am supposed to be coming from in terms of who is my audience, what am I, what is my role this broadcast, you know what I mean? So do the work, and like, you might have to work for $0 in an internet show that 6 people watch, but get your reps, learn. There is somebody to learn from all the time, and then just continue to grow and try new opportunities. You will have things you love and things you hate, but it's important to have both, right? Like, because you don't know what you don't know until you do it.
100%. Yeah. All the respect to that. You got to be willing to take a step sideways or step backwards, yeah, to take 2 steps forward. And anyone who just, you know, reaches out just to try to get into MMA, go to your local regional scene. Treat, yes, it like your Super Bowl. You know, yes, treat every athlete like it's Conor McGregor or Khabib Nurmagomedov. Yeah. Make it your own. Like you said, you need to get your reps. You need to get your experience. And yeah, what you said, 100% on board with.
And that they shouldn't be expecting, you know, a huge paycheck,
yeah,
right away. Because in the beginning, at least, like, for me, I had to save up, you know, money and, like, buy airtime.
Yeah.
It was rough.
We paid our way to get to these UFC events, you know?
I used to steal my breakfast and lunch from the green room where I worked because I couldn't afford it. I'd go in so early, I'd sneak in, get a coffee, take a muffin. Then right before they threw out the breakfast food, I'd be like, okay, what's left, I'll take it, because I had no money. But this is what I needed to do. And there is always somebody who wants to do the same thing as you. And there's always going to be somebody who's more educated or who's prettier or who has more connections. But there is nothing like doing the work and doing the work the right way. And I think that's the best advice I can give.
Amen.
Very well said. Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth.
Episode 38 of the Schmo Zone podcast on Yas Island, Fight Island.
I love you guys.
Love you.